Before we get started with today's show, I wanted to tell you about another great podcast. Bald Men on Campus, an ESPN podcast hosted by Jay Billis, LaPhonso Ellis, and Seth Greenberg. These ESPN basketball personalities give you an all-access pass inside the world of college basketball, talking to the biggest names in the sport. That's Bald Men on Campus. Listen wherever you get your podcasts. Also, NBA Today, hosted by Malika Andrews, offers exclusive content Monday through Friday at 3 p.m. Eastern, noon Pacific. Alongside Malika, there will be a full cast of NBA experts and insiders, including Kendrick Perkins, Chinwe Agumake, Vince Carter, Zach Lowe, Woj, Ramona Shelburne, and many of our NBA reporters from around the league. Get caught up with the latest from around the NBA on NBA Today on ESPN and the ESPN app. One app, one tap. And also available as a podcast. Listen to NBA Today wherever you get your podcasts. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to The Right Time. My name is Bomani Jones. Thanks for listening wherever you get your podcasts. Thanks for watching on YouTube. Rate us, review us, give us 5 stars. You only give us 4 stars. I'm inclined to believe you are a hater. It is that time of week where we have a guest join us. Check out Brother from Another on the Peacock Network. His name is Michael Smith, and I'm having you on here just because, like, people I feel like got this mistaken understanding about me and about people like me. And they think that I'm not the kind of person who can admit when I was wrong. And I, however, believe that what the real issue is, they just not used to somebody being right so much. You know what I'm saying? And so they don't realize I say I'm wrong when I'm wrong. It just don't be coming up that much. But your guessing ass came up here a couple weeks ago, all prisoner of the moment, and you had the Cincinnati Bengals going to the Super Bowl, which I admit was one of the more absurd things I've ever heard in my life. And what do you know? Patrick Mahomes turned into Jimmy Garoppolo, and here we are, Joe Burrow and the Cincinnati Bengals in the Super Bowl.
It kind of sounds like you want to call me a blind squirrel or a broken clock right now, is what you're suggesting.
Just say twice a day, big dog, twice a day.
But honestly, though, it's funny, you know, you and I are so much alike in many ways. I like to tell my man Michael Holly all the time, I don't have a problem admit when I'm wrong because it's so infrequent till it's not that hard. You know, it's not uncomfortable for me. If you have to admit it all the time, I can see why you'd be reluctant to do it. But when you do it once in a while, I expect a humility involved, which I respect that. I see a lot of myself in that as well.
Well, let me tell you the
other part, too. Not a hater, though. So
yeah,
you'll give
props where they due. How about pretend like I wasn't wrong? Gabe got a Scobo. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah,
like, it's right there.
Yeah.
Final score. You was wrong, dog. It's right there.
I got to thank you for having me on, especially it feels like I can have some closure from that beat 'em down I took on the trivia contest, on the trivia tournament. So it feels like, you know, I'm making up for that awful showing just a little bit.
And that time I saw you have to sign the paper in a spades game in 2012 in New Orleans.
Where's the paper? If I signed it, where is it?
You signed it. You just don't remember signing it, but you signed it. Don't make me get Vinny out here to verify this. Me and Vinny were playing spades against Mike and Jamel, and we whooped that ass. And Mike had to sign the paper because he was out here acting willy-nilly. Jamel, I recall, was not too pleased with your performance.
Why is everybody... See, that's some bullshit. Why is everybody putting it on me? See, Vinny does the same thing. Why am I the person responsible for that? We were a team. Why can't she take some of the blame for that? Did she not underbid? Did she play her hand perfectly? Like, why do I have to... See, that's just... You're not helping me out right now, man. Like, why?
But you was right about the Bengals. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, like, right. Thank you. Let's get back to that.
You was right about the Bengals at the game here, dog. You in L.A. right now, as a matter of fact.
But honestly, there's only so much credit I actually am willing to take. Well, first of all, it was not a prisoner of the moment thing. In fact, my only regret from the last time I was on with you, I did the whole don't be surprised if thing. I ain't even go all the way with it.
I shouldn't even be giving you all this credit I'm giving you now.
Probably not on your show. Not on your show. But the five people who watch my show, they know that I've been on the Bengals all season. It was this running gag that me and Michael Holly was having because he was on the Bengals from when they drafted Jamar Chase. And so I kind of adopted them all year long. So I had them winning the division. And then when they got into the playoffs and they beat the Raiders, I'm like, they're going to the Super Bowl. So I stuck with them the whole time. For some reason, when I came on with you, I was like, hemming and hawing a little bit. So I can't even rightfully take a bunch of credit. Not to mention they were down 21-3. I certainly didn't predict that that was going to happen. So if you'd have called me at halftime and asked you, yo, how you feel? I probably wouldn't have felt good at the time. So I didn't see that happening, but I saw that there was something special about this team and that quarterback, which everybody has seen, but nobody saw it playing out that way.
Yo, let me tell you something that's interesting about the Bengals now is, like, we as media, we always, like, we got to be right after, like, the results kind of change. Mm-hmm. And another part that I think is important is, like, in those moments when stuff like that happens, if you stick to your convictions, depending upon what those convictions are, people just think that you can't admit that you're wrong, right? Mm-hmm. And so people don't quite know what to do. So I was reading a story in The Athletic. I don't know if you saw this one about the Bengals scouting department.
Yeah, about them hearing about how cheap they are and how
the smallest department. So, like, Dominique and I have talked about this, just like the reputation of the cheapness of the Bengals. And to put this in perspective for you, the Rams have 26 scouts on their payroll. The Bengals have 8. And so The Athletic did this long story basically about how the Bengals are a lean, mean scouting machine and managed to put together this team that went to the Super Bowl.
Coaches who do the scouting with them?
Right. They win it, by the way, by 13 points in those 3 games, right? Yeah. So, like, we're not talking about a juggernaut that has been built. But what happens is after a team gets to be successful, you have to be like, yo, their scouting approach must be fantastic. Like, it's not possible it could be an anomaly or anything like that. And so those dudes are like, yeah, we like it that the coaches work with us when we're scouting. You know, you don't really need all this stuff, I would love to talk to these same people if they went 4-13 this year, tired as hell, sick of making all these moves.
Yeah. Well, I mean, listen, it wasn't hard to scout Joe Burrow. So it's like, you know, you get to be 2-14, you get rewarded.
Jamar Chase neither.
You know what I'm saying? Like, okay, he's just sitting there. Some of it's kind of obvious. I mean, look, they have done a good job. But also, too, I mean, look, a lot of these guys that are making a difference, especially on the defensive side of the ball, are free agents. I mean, they didn't scout Trey Hendrickson coming out the draft. You know, they didn't scout Ouzier. They didn't scout Mike Hilton coming out the draft.
Shout out to you for knowing their names.
I've told you, this has been an all-year thing. I've been on the Bengals all year. I just, for some reason, when I was put on the spot here, I did the don't be surprised thing. I should have just went all the way with it instead of halfway with it. But nah, I mean, you're right. It's like, now it's like, oh, is this a different paradigm? Is this a different shift? Should we reevaluate how we look at the relationship between coaches and scouts or the size of scouting departments? No, they got Joe Burrow. That's it. They got Joe Burrow and they signed some good free agents, you know?
Yeah, who was scouting them linemen? You know what I'm saying? Yeah. And right fast, because I know Bengals fans are out here. I've been checking it. They've been a little salty with me because they want me to be part of their love fest, and I'm still laughing at them because they're the Bengals. Like, you think I'm about to stop 30 years on a dime. You know what I'm saying? I just personally think that's too much to ask of me. Like, I'm not out here ridiculing y'all. I could point out some of the more painful moments in your fandom of being a Cincinnati Bengals fan, but I ain't going to do that. You know what I'm saying? I'm not going to talk about how your general manager / owner used to basically run a halfway house and some of his, like, beneficiaries wound up blowing that playoff game when they had it where Pac-Man Jones got an unsportsmanlike conduct, Jeremy Hill fumbled, and Vontaze Burfict hit Antonio Brown in the head. It was like all the wayward sons back-to-back-to-back had it happen.
Yeah.
But I wasn't going to talk to y'all about that. I have no shade against the Bengals. I don't have, like, the enthusiasm about it, really. I mean, which is wild, though, for me to be fair, because they got dudes I like, right?
Yeah.
I like Joe Burrow. I like the receivers. Joe Mixon is good, right? Let's just go there. Like, Joe Mixon is good. Ugliest uniforms in sports, and they have written them out for 40 years. But that's a different discussion.
We were having that one yesterday, though. Ugliest in sports?
Dog, nobody has had uglier uniforms that they've been dedicated to ride out. And then about 20 years ago, they're like, yo, we need to change the uniforms. And all they did was make them futuristic.
Well, what's funny is, like, if you think these are ugly, they're an improvement over what it used to be when they just had Bengals written on the side of them joints.
Well, here's what I want to know. I want to know what Mike Brown actually thinks about them jerseys. There ain't no way in the world no 85-year-old man is like, yeah, that's what I'm talking about.
Well, I mean, again, with all due respect to the great Paul Brown, it's the same dude without naming rights on his stadium. You know what I mean?
Yo, which is the bane of other owners.
Yeah?
I mean, it's the stadium named after his daddy. You know what I'm saying?
Well, everybody else out here making this money off of naming rights.
That's why I respect it. Because he's cheap as hell, but he's like, yo, some things are more important than money.
Fair enough. And it is Paul Brown.
Yeah.
The modern NFL was built on his ingenuity, more or less. So, yeah, it is Paul Brown. But I don't know, man. Like, I think this is a team. It's so funny. I was thinking about my boy, Michael Markham. Growing up in New Orleans, this dude I went to elementary school with, this dude was a Bengals fan because he loved it. You ain't love the Icky Shuffle, dude? Come on, boy. You had to love the Icky Shuffle. Everybody
cool.
Loved the Icky Shuffle. Okay, it was cool. It was a thing.
Though, with retrospect, what an unimpressive dance.
Right. You know? But nonetheless, it was popular. So when Boomer Esiason...
And white people feel confident they could do it.
They could do it, yes.
That's crucial.
Or black people who can dance.
Right. But like, why you think the Macarena got to be so hot? We could do it. I mean, you had to have a good memory. But like, you could do it.
Can you dance?
Not to save my life, especially after I quit drinking.
Yeah. Yeah. The one dance I was always comfortable doing was the Humpty dance.
Yeah, I could do that.
I was comfortable doing that.
I could do that. The Humpty dance is for us.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I'm saying? I could do that. What I needed to do was basically, man, I need to spend more time partying with white folks, man. You do whatever the hell you want with that.
Exactly.
And not only that, you do whatever the hell you want, and it won't be long before somebody else is doing it.
It's copying you because they assume you know what you're doing. Like, oh, yes. That must be what's hot in the streets. Like, we was talking to Justin Jefferson yesterday, the Gritty. Like, he was breaking down how to do it. I'm like, bro, I have been accused of dancing to the words and not the beat. So you can tell me how to do the Gritty. I won't be trying it in any kind of public setting. But Michael Markham used to love the Bengals.
Hold on, right fast.
Shout out to
that.
Him. Yeah, go ahead.
This is something that's interesting, though, a difference. We both grew up on I-10, but you grew up in New Orleans and I grew up in Houston, right?
Yeah.
And I realized something when I got to Atlanta is that Houston is just not a dancing city, right? Like, you get to Atlanta, it's dudes out here with their partners and they doing the same dance and they wearing funny color shoes and they spinning around and
performing
doing all this
talent
stuff.
Shows and
yes. Yeah. That is not how Houston, that is not what we do.
Yeah,
no,
New Orleans
no.
that too. Everybody
that's not us.
The same outfits.
Yeah,
the
yeah. Let me show music. You. Let me give you an impression of a dude from Houston dancing. Leaning back.
I'm in the club
pulling that
up.
Shirt up.
That's, got that's, my that's, arms that's, folded.
Lean back. Lean yeah. back. Pull that shirt up. That's the dance. Yes, that's the dance.
Yeah, man. Absolutely.
All right, so what's up with your man, Michael Barker?
No. I would just say he was a Bengals fan. And you know, this was back when Boomer, I mean, I liked them back in the late 80s, early 90s. With Boomer, man, the way he used to play action, that thing. Left-handed quarterback. I used to like Esiason, like Eddie Brown. Remember David Fulcher? Big-ass 33.
Yeah, I do remember David Fulcher. The Vulture.
That dude was a monster. So I think this is a team, despite their, you know, lack of fashion sense, with this quarterback and these wide receivers, especially in this era of fantasy football, dog, they got an opportunity to really be a popular team on a nationwide level, you know?
They do. So, like, here's interesting fan stuff, right? So I grew up in Houston, but when we moved to Houston, I already had teams. So I'm not, like, on the pro sports, I'm not a fan, like a fan.
Who'd you have when y'all moved to Houston? Who was your team?
I had all of the Atlanta teams, you know? All right, so like, I never rooted against, the only Houston team I ever rooted against was the Astros. Because I recognized at a young age what a conditional love that city had with the Astros. While I was rooting for the sorry Braves, you know what I'm saying? Like, at that point in my life, I was much more idealistic and I could not respect the way that they got down. But anyway, you got to remember, Oilers-Bengals was a rivalry in that run that you're talking about. Yeah, I mean, that was a nasty, ugly rivalry, and the Oilers took some ugly L's. But it's hard for me to be somebody who think about, like, liking the Bengals because I grew up in a city that despised them.
Yeah, yeah. I'm surprised you didn't jump on the Oilers.
No, I had a team.
Okay.
I had a team.
They had Warren Moon. Like, you know,
they did. You know what? You know what part of it was? But you know what part of it was with Warren Moon? Was that I didn't properly appreciate at that age how uncommon it was to have a black quarterback.
Yeah.
Like, I was 6-7 years old. Like, I wasn't watching that much
it
NFL football.
It felt kind of normal. Yeah, Doug Williams, it felt kind of normal
yeah,
a little bit.
Yeah, but, like, just then, I just didn't know. Like, I didn't get what Warren Moon was. Like, when he signed with the Oilers, I was, like, 4 years old, so I didn't remember, like, the big deal around that or anything. Actually, Warren's sister went to Prairie View while my parents were there. I met Warren Moon once, got his autograph. I remember I was getting, it was 1989. I went to my swimming lesson at the new gym at Prairie View, and my mama ran over to pick me up, and we're like, yo, she's like, Warren Moon's in the office. Warren Moon's in the office.
Right.
Like, she ran over.
You need to come meet him. Yeah.
Yeah, come back, and I still got that autograph at the crib from Warren Moon.
I had a Warren Moon jersey back in the day. Remember back, we used to wear the jerseys that go out to those aforementioned dances where the dudes all dressed alike.
Yes.
And did their choreographed dances. The Warren Moon jersey was it, man.
Yeah, but the Bengals, like, good for the people who root for them.
Exactly.
I have no reason to throw shade at the people who root for the Cincinnati Bengals. Like, good for you. This has worked out. Now, what I don't really have a great handle on in L.A. is who be rooting for the Rams.
And that's weird, because don't L.A. strike you kind of like as a front-running kind of fan base? You know what I mean? Like, if somebody win it, they would jump on it, you know?
Yeah, I mean, the thing that's interesting about what's happened with the Rams is, and I guess it's partially because they got there a year before the Chargers did, you know, in the return, but the Rams became the team for the stars to go see. It'll never be nobody in them boxes for them Chargers games, right? They're out here showing Leonardo DiCaprio, like, they're making it look like a Lakers game. Used to. Chargers games, nope, it just looked like they playing in San Diego still, except for the fact that San Diego, they had their own fans at stadium. But yeah, I can't, like, the Rams, when I lived in California, and this was in from 01 to 03, so it'd been a while since the Rams and Raiders left, I knew plenty of Raiders fans. I don't recall encountering people who were, like, still down with the Rams. Like, I don't know who it is in L.A. that really is invested in the Rams.
I wonder if they were just gone so long to where whatever foothold they had. Because, I mean, and both the Chargers and the Rams have history in L.A., obviously. But the Rams, I mean, you talk about, like, glory team, you know, Waterfield and Elroy, Crazy Legs, Hirsch and shit. Like, this was the team. This was the—
I mean, they've been there for decades.
Right. And so when they came back, I remember people, like, at least old media, were excited about— our Rams are coming back. Maybe they just lost whatever opportunity they had to, you know, have this generation of fans when they moved to St. Louis for so long.
Or they might have it. I just have no idea, right? Like, I have
no concept.
I don't think
they have it because I think I saw, was it maybe Dimoff was talking about it. They're looking at this as just this perfect storm and this opportunity to grow the fan base by having a Super Bowl in their stadium. So they know that there's work to be done to capture the hearts and minds of the L.A. sports fan. But I don't know what else they have to do. They got to... high profile quarterback.
Yeah.
They got the best receiver in the league. They got Odell Beckham. They got Aaron Donald. They got Jalen Ramsey. It's like, you got stars. You got a dynamic coach. You winning. You got an incredible stadium. Like, if this was franchise mode, you should be making hand over fist. You should be owning your community. Like, you built the perfect franchise. You flip those draft picks as if it's Madden and you don't care about them to get all these star players. I'm not sure what else they have to do. If they don't have a burgeoning fan base now, how will they ever?
That's a fair question, right? They're probably going to be the Super Bowl champions. Like, are you still picking the Bengals? You think they're going to the Super Bowl?
Yes, Bomani. Yes. Yes.
Ah. See, I'll go over the Rams.
Unequivocally. I have that same feeling about, and I know it's more than just Joe Burrow. I know he can't block for himself. I know he can't. I know he doesn't play defense. I get it. But I have the same feeling about Burrow as I had about Brady. And I'm not, of course, I'm not saying he is Tom Brady or will be Tom Brady, but I've always had this reluctance to pick against Brady's ability to pull it out if it's close. Now, that could be a big if, because if he's on his back the whole time and they turning it over and Matthew Stafford hit a couple of them big ones to Cooper Kupp, it may not be close.
Dude, that's a lot of trust in the third-year quarterback, man. It's a lot.
I don't want to pick a second.
You're right. Yeah. You're right. Like, that's a lot of you going all the way to the— I don't want to bet against him.
I am. I'm already there. Yes. I'm already at the I don't want to bet against Joe Burrow. Even though, and you saw it in the Kansas City game, Joe Burrow wasn't incredible.
No.
You know what I mean? It wasn't like Joe Burrow threw 500 yards or something. It was like, I mean, the defense made plays. They shut down Patrick Mahomes. If this defense could frustrate Matthew Stafford, they can keep it close. But again, man, like, as much as he's been beat up all season, this is me. Honestly, I'm not being a prisoner of the moment. I'm sticking to it this time. I'm sticking to it with my Bengals pick. I'm not going to jump off this bandwagon right now. But I'm looking at this pass rush for the Rams, and I'm like, they ain't seen nothing like that. You know, and they ain't been able to block nobody all year. So I am trusting that Joe Burrow and Zach Taylor got a plan for how to keep Joe Burrow off his ass.
So what's interesting to me is that I actually trust Burrow more than I trust Stafford.
Still?
Yeah, like the possibility of the what are you doing is still higher to me with Stafford than it is with Burrow. I would say I think the ceiling on Stafford is higher.
In this game.
Yes. Or just generally speaking, right? Like, we're still here on Matt Stafford because of the ceiling. And it's not like the lows for Stafford are super crazy low, right? It's not like Jameis Winston level lows versus highs. Like, I don't think the variance in performance is that high with him. But the lows are always possible. The issue with him is consistency. He is an inconsistent quarterback.
He gonna throw you one.
Yeah, like, I feel like Burrow's a more consistent type, right?
Yeah.
But I'm there with you, man. They ain't but so, like, you can't get sacked 9 times again. And I know that that's an extreme example what happened with them. But the Rams' defensive line and pass rush, I think we'd argue, was coming stronger than the Titans did.
Oh, no question. No question. Now, the thing is, especially in that Chiefs game, Burrow showed a lot of wheels in that game.
Oh, he's been doing that.
You know? So if he could find a way to, you know, avoid the rush, you know, keep the chains moving, because what they could not do against the Chiefs well enough, even though they stuck with it, and by the end of the game, they started to do it better. They didn't run the ball well enough on the early downs. And so every play was 2nd and 9, 3rd and 9. So, you know, the pass rush was just teeing off. If they could find a way to get some kind of running game going with Joe Mixon, and if Joe could do his magician thing in the pocket, might be able to neutralize it. But just straight up blocking, bro, they ain't got nothing for Aaron Donald and Von Miller and Leonard Floyd. Like, that's just ridiculous.
Well, that's what I'm saying. You already got to put 2-3 people on Aaron Donald. Like, that's the thing. Joe Burrow can show them wheels, and wheels run you into another one of them dudes.
I'm telling you. I mean, yeah. That, I mean, see, don't talk me out of it. Don't just let me go with the blind faith in Joe Burrow thing. Don't remind me, if I want to compare him to Tom Brady, don't remind me what the Giants front four did to Tom Brady twice. You know, don't let the facts get in the way of my good story. Okay, I'm on here for a second time to do a victory lap. A second time in a week to do a victory lap about my Bengals. Please don't. This is what happened last time. I went against my gut. Sometimes it's just about gut and intangibles and momentum, Bomani.
Oh, there you go.
I know how much you love momentum. It's about those intangible things. Don't talk me out of my Bengals pick. Don't have me on the fence. I'm getting off the fence. Bengals.
Well, I'm not going to get you on the fence. I'm going to just ask you this. Me and Mina Kimes are talking about this, and I'm a little surprised with you being...
Oh, I'm joking about the momentum thing.
Oh, yeah, I know that. Yeah. But you being a New Orleans dude, I'm a little surprised you're not rooting for the same thing me and Mina are rooting for, which is Odell Beckham, Super Bowl MVP. The world explodes. Remember when they told us he couldn't play no more? Like, I've said this many times on this podcast, but remember they tried to tell us he wasn't good no more? And I'm going to ask you this. You're a good person to ask about this. The comparison I make is they told us Randy Moss wasn't no good in 2006.
Mm-hmm. And you being the biggest Randy Moss fan that I know, that's why I could appreciate. I knew I wasn't tripping. And it wasn't a hard comp to make about the potential of Odell Beckham to go from a bad situation and be reborn under better circumstances. It wasn't like anybody was saying, I wasn't, that Odell Beckham is Randy Moss or ever has been Randy Moss. But in terms of the career arc, Oakland as Cleveland, you know, Rams as Patriots, I never thought that was a stretch. There were some people that thought that was a stretch. I think that is the most apt comparison for somebody who was as dynamic a player as we've seen in a long time. He all of a sudden just forgot how to play. Yeah, he got hurt. But that was the least surprising development to me at all, because not only was he still good, not only did he have a better offensive system and a better quarterback, but he also had every incentive to be a phenomenal teammate. He couldn't go blow this. He couldn't pick the Rams and then go and perpetuate all the things that were said about him in Cleveland. So if Odell Beckham, I don't believe he was ever as much of a problem as he was made out to be. That's number one. But if Odell Beckham was a problem in the facility and in the organization, he wasn't going to be that in L.A. Because one thing, he's not as stupid. You know what I'm saying? So he was going to be all right this year, if nothing else. But nah, man, I thought the Randy Moss comparison was always the right one in terms of the potential of what he could do under better circumstances.
And then the Rams, old fortunate asses, you get to bring in Odell Beckham and make him your number two receiver.
Number three at first?
That's
if
right,
not
Robert,
for Robert
Woods.
Woods, he was number three. Yeah, and all, that's what I'm saying. He, no matter how good he may not have been anymore, he only had to be but so good as a number two or number three when you got Cooper Kupp on the other side. So, nah, man, that was the pickup of the year right there.
So I want him to win Super Bowl MVP. Everybody has so much to say. Yeah. I would be just – I just could not believe. And you could say that those clips that came out in that one video, you know, I understand the idea that just because the dude's open doesn't mean he's the person you throw the ball to, depending on the way a play goes. But it was just play after play after play of him being open. You know what I'm saying? Like it was just so many of them that I'm just like, come on, man. Y'all think I'm stupid here? And y'all try to tell me this dude can't play.
Can't improvise? I mean, like, ain't no, but whatever he doing something right. Maybe he doing the wrong thing for the right reasons, as my man once said in Good Times when he stole the TV to feed his family. Like, if he improvising, he must know something the quarterback don't in order to be wide-ass open and the quarterback ain't hitting him. So don't tell me about, oh, well, he ain't running the route he's supposed to route according to the system. Okay, well, yeah, maybe that route would have got him 6 yards. He opened for a 60-yard touchdown.
And by the way, maybe that's the case. Maybe he wasn't running the routes he was supposed to. But I am not a football genius, but I know enough to know when a dude run good routes, yeah. Right? Like, even if you say it's the wrong route, right. It was a good one. There was right. He wasn't open because them dudes is like, nah, that ain't the play they called. Let him go.
Right. And is he all of a sudden doing something that much different, or does he have a better coach that just knows how to utilize him better and a better system that knows how to get him open, and a better quarterback, for that matter, that gets him the ball? I would say among the personal stories, see, I don't want to do the thing where it's like, oh, they're going to be here again. They're young. They'll get their chances.
Oh, don't do that.
Yeah, well, but even in general, I mean, you know, ask Marino. I mean, ain't no guarantees of getting back at all, let alone winning it, right? But I would say, so with all due respect to their personal journeys and what this means for them, I would say by far the better stories are on the Rams side. We talked about the Rams fan base or potentially lack thereof. The country should be rooting for the Rams. Like, as much as people may not like the, you know, if you're a traditionalist and you want to see teams built through this 8-person scouting department or whatever and drafted and not just build a team overnight like the Rams did or not have a team full of stars, their stars are all honestly quite likable. And Donald deserves to have a championship on his resume. We know they're all playing for him. They've talked about that. Matthew Stafford. How can you not root for Matthew Stafford?
I can't. Yeah.
Come on. Come on, Mr. Five Stars.
I don't see nothing to root for. I don't have anything to root against, but I don't see nothing to root for.
Why not?
I mean,
you don't think it's a good story?
What's the story? What's the story? Number one overall pick, underachieves for 12 years, and then gets to the Super Bowl in the 13th?
Underachieves. You think he underachieved in Detroit?
Yeah, he
underachieved. Number one overall pick?
Yeah, I'm not saying he was bad, but he is the least scrutinized number one overall pick there's ever been. Can you think of a number one overall pick to not win a single playoff game in 12 years and people try to tell you in the 13th about how it wasn't not a damn bit of it his fault? Now, this is my thing about him, okay? Mel Kiper predicted when he was a junior in high school that Matt Stafford would be the number one overall pick, okay?
Yep.
He got to Georgia. He was never the best quarterback in the Southeastern Conference when he was at Georgia. They were preseason number one in 2008 when they added this freshman named A.J. Green. At no point in his time in Georgia was he a difference-making quarterback. He was a very talented quarterback, but it wasn't a we got a chance to win because Matthew Stafford is here. And for 12 years in Detroit, he never became a guy where you felt like they might not, even if the team wasn't good, but you felt like we got a chance to win this one because we got Matthew Stafford. Never. He never got to that place. So, yeah, I do say that guy has underachieved. He hasn't been bad, right? Because that's what happens. When you say, like, underachieve and underrate, people think you're saying bad. I'm not saying he's bad. He absolutely has underachieved. He's made one Pro Bowl his whole career, and everybody gets to go.
Now they do. I would say underachieve relative to being a franchise savior. Was he, okay, if you talk about the pantheon of number one overall picks, and it's Peyton Manning, it's John Elway, it's Troy Aikman, was he on that? Of course, no, he was not on that level. But I just remember so many years of them not having any kind of running game to speak of. I remember a dominant defense in Detroit. And if you're telling me that.
What did they have?
They had Calvin Johnson. They had Megatron.
They
had Calvin Johnson. They had Calvin Johnson. And Calvin Johnson ended up pulling the Barry Sanders for the same reason that Barry Sanders did. Like, I'm not playing for this.
Yeah, but see,
you know,
I disagree with the Barry Sanders comparison. Barry Sanders played for good teams. Yeah, because Barry Sanders played for good teams in Detroit. Like the Lions
better
are just
teams.
So. Yeah, the Lions have just been so historically bad that you want to talk about how bad, like, look how bad they were without Barry Sanders. And then you're like, oh, whoa, okay, that's what the bottom is.
I wouldn't say Calvin's teams were that much worse than Barry's teams. I mean, there we go.
You got to where I was going. That also means Matthew Stafford's teams weren't really that bad either.
They weren't, okay, but that's why I'm going back to the underachieving. Listen, Matthew Stafford, there were plenty of times where Matthew Stafford brought the Lions back and delivered victory in the second half, brought them back from deficits.
After they were behind because he was throwing the ball away.
You took the words right out of my mouth. That he put them in quite often. You know what I mean? So he got himself out of his own jams a lot of times. Underachieve feels harsh for me only because you look at the history of the Detroit Lions, other than Bobby Lane, like who was able to overcome
the Lions? But underachieve is harsh because we just don't have another word. Right? There's no way.
What did you expect? Okay, underachieved relative to your expectations. As a number one overall pick?
Relative to expectations, relative to all the money they kept giving him at every turn, relative to the level of, like I say, the absolute lack of criticism nationally. In Detroit, they had criticisms. Nationally, the way that he was perpetually absolved of any responsibility for the fact that maybe they just weren't that good, right? Like, not even people making the point that you made. He was making them comebacks, but in part because he was the one that was putting them down. I am just saying, you are a number one overall pick. You made all the money that he made. You kept that job in Detroit for as long as you kept that job. They didn't win a playoff game, and you individually made it to the Pro Bowl one time. It's not like really spectacular statistical achievement. You can do a lot of like compiling stuff, and you're going to get up. He's probably going to retire as one of the top three passing yard guys of all time. But go look at like the yards per attempt to be the guy with the big arm. You don't really see that. Like, there were certainly weaknesses in the ways that the team were built around. It was built around him. But I'll tell you this. I spent a lot of time watching prime Cam Newton. I know what it looks like when there is a star quarterback raising the level of the people who are around him.
That's
what I'm saying, is that he has been treated for so long like a guy who the treatment that Stafford gets is the treatment of a guy who raises the level. He's not raising the level with the Rams either.
No, he's not. No, okay, that I am in no way absolving Matthew Stafford for what the Lions were not able to do with him. He was not this poor, helpless victim of his circumstances. And if the bar for a number one overall pick is a gold jacket and somebody who is going to be a thermostat and not a thermometer, somebody who's going to set the tone and set the temperature and is going, regardless of the circumstances, going to elevate that franchise, that was not Matthew Stafford. So yes, by that measure, by the hype, by the draft status, by the contract, even by the numbers, which may not have been Pro Bowl worthy, put up some great numbers, a lot of empty stats, as it were. Yes, okay, underachieving, while harsh, is accurate.
Just give me a softer synonym and I'll use it.
I don't know, it has to be softer, though. It's probably deserved, but I'm saying, like, you can still root for him. You can still say, all right, it's a cool story, bro, right?
No, but I don't see what's cool about it. That's all I'm
saying. Somebody finally breaking through. I mean, okay.
Took you long enough.
Better late than never. Day late than a dollar short, I guess. Okay.
Andy from Dallas. Forgot about that. Well, then, Highland Park, no less.
So if you just think there is some intrinsic flaw, something that's just in Matthew Stafford that, whether it's his, you know, inconsistency, whether it's his, you know, habit of doing the what are you doing throws. If you think that's just something that's been holding him back and now he just lucked up and because of his talent, because of his profile, a team, you know, just blessed him with the opportunity to be in a perfect situation. So he doesn't deserve any credit for that. Okay, if that's how you want to play it, I tend to look at it as he always had this in him and now 13 years in a different team, we're finally seeing him perform on a big stage. I think that's a cool story.
Yeah, cool story. 13 years in, we finally realize maybe he's just a system quarterback.
Sometimes that's what I'm saying.
But like, for example, Andrew Wiggins. What makes the Andrew Wiggins story good is that somebody woke up and was like, you know what? Maybe he should just be a number three option. Like, that's a backhanded good story.
I appreciate the Andrew Wiggins comp, but you know as well as I do, number one overall pick in basketball is much different than number one overall pick in football. And one player in basketball means a whole different thing than one player in football. All quarterbacks, at the end of the day, are system quarterbacks.
There's something to that.
Yeah, very few quarterbacks transcend their circumstances or transcend their surroundings. They all need receivers, they all need protection, and they all need a coach to, at minimum, not hold them back. If you're not going to elevate them, don't get in the way.
Well, I mean, I think Stafford, like the Caldwell era, at the very least, I would argue that Stafford had that when he was in in Detroit.
Yes.
Like, I think you're right macro about, like, most people. And I don't even think that you have to be a Hall of Famer to live up to the hype of being a number one overall pick, Cam Newton being an example of that one. But I do think that a guy like Stafford, in the way that Stafford is discussed and they gave up all those picks to get him, that's a guy that raises the level of what's around him, right? So Alex Smith, and I think that Matthew Stafford's better than Alex Smith, but like Alex Smith, decent quarterback, underachiever to be a number one overall pick. But I think there's Matthew Stafford where it's not just being a number one overall pick, it is being the guy that we have been told that Matthew Stafford was and who people continue to try to tell you that he was well past the point where you kind of who you are in the NFL.
The Alex Smith one, maybe I'm getting caught up in the reclamation. I don't know that I would qualify Alex Smith as an underachiever.
It took 6 years decent.
San Francisco was so bad.
Right, and you know what he looked like? Another bad dude on the team. You know what it looks like when it's a good, like, so you and New Orleans dude, right? We weren't alive for much of this, but you know where I'm gonna go here. Archie Manning. Every time somebody talks about Archie Manning, it was, man, the Saints were bad, but Archie Manning was good, right? We have examples of guys who fit that description. That wasn't how it looked with Alex Smith. When he looked sorry when they looked sorry. When they looked good, he looked all right.
And look, he was limited. He was limited coming out of Utah physically, at least from an arm strength and mechanical standpoint. He was limited coming out of Utah. We all know who probably should have gone number one that year. But nonetheless, I have a hard time. The only reason I struggle, you know, and maybe, you know, maybe the reason I struggle with tagging Alex Smith with the number one overall pick underachiever tag is because of how he was able to rebound from that San Francisco experience. That shit was awful and could have destroyed him. But what he did in Kansas City, yeah, he gave way to Patrick Mahomes. But what he did in Kansas City was nothing to be ashamed of at all. And what he ended up doing in San Francisco, he ended up being solid and successful in San Francisco, and they had a Colin Kaepernick.
And the reason they didn't go to the Super Bowl in 2011, it was wild. He was the reason why they won that game against the Saints, the best game of his life, right? Yeah, where they, what was it, the fourth down where they ran the sweep around the left with him? One of the best play calls, definitely the best play call of Greg Roman's life, right? And then they played that game against the Giants, and they couldn't convert a third down throwing the ball because Alex Smith. And
so he also had god-awful wide receivers.
That's fair. But if you the number one, but the next year they had a different quarterback and the same receivers and went to the Super Bowl, and they had Michael Crabtree, so they weren't all god-awful. But the thing with Smith is if you are the reason that your team can't go to a Super Bowl and you were the number one overall pick in the same draft with Aaron Rodgers, you, my friend, underachieved.
Speaking of reasons that you can't go to the Super Bowl, I just want to take this opportunity. We don't have to spend a lot of time here. I just want to interject that I was a fourth quarter Matthew Stafford comeback away from having, I think you termed it, the worst quarterback matchup in Super Bowl history. I was this close to Garoppolo versus Burrow.
Oh, my God. Yeah, I'm about to say, I did my victory lap on Jimmy, dog. When they got that ball with the last drive, not a single person, not even the Garoppolos, thought that that was going to work out well for San Francisco.
Dude,
it felt like it do when the backup quarterback's in there and it's like, okay, we gave up the lead. I thought we could hold it. You think Hundley can bring us back? No.
I'm a softy, man. I think that's what we've established throughout this conversation. I'm a softy. I need somebody like you to counter that. I was rooting for Jimmy. When he got that opportunity, I'm like, come on, Jimmy. Come on, just show him that you're not who you've shown yourself to be all these years. Have an out-of-body experience of some kind, but just produce some kind of magic at the end of this game to just, because I just feel like, look, okay, would you agree that there's going to be, at least based on reports, whatever that's worth, there's going to be a market for Jimmy Garoppolo?
Yes.
That doesn't make sense to me.
Me either.
but for different reasons. If there's a market for Jimmy Garoppolo, Doesn't it stand the reason that that you can't be like, oh, the Niners won in spite of him? Or, you know, like, no, like, he had something to do. You can't win 35 games and lose 15 or whatever the number is in spite of somebody.
Yes, and, you can.
Bro, the Niners ain't that good. They're good, but they ain't so good. Kyle Shanahan is not that much of a genius to where you win in that many games in spite of their quarterback.
The Steelers once went to the AFC Championship game with Cordell Stewart
New Orleans
as their quarterback. New Orleans, all great college quarterback, right? Had a good little run there, but not a guy that you want to be. They once got to the AFC Championship game with Cordell Stewart as their quarterback. We can go through. We've seen some bums get a lot farther than we ever. I saw there are levels to bumdom. I saw the Broncos win a Super Bowl with half of a Peyton Manning.
Not even half. With his corpse.
Y'all, think about this. The Broncos looked around at the halfway point of the season and were like, dog, just go sit in ice all day long. We'll call you back during the playoffs. But for now, you know who's going to hold this down for us? Brock Osweiler. That's who's going to hold this down for us. And just come back and don't mess nothing up.
Who held it down was Von Miller. They had an all-time great dominant defense. The Niners, they've been good these last 3 years. I'm skipping last year when everybody got hurt again. Went to the Super Bowl and an NFC Championship game. I'm not trying to cape up for Jimmy. This is not the hill I want to die on. I'm confused about the fact that he's going to be so sought after in the offseason. It's going to be a robust trade market for somebody who everybody tell me is trash.
Because they falling for the same dumb stuff that you falling for right now, right? Just the, hey, man, I mean, if they won all those games with them, right? The correlation-causation argument. But number two, it's scarcity. There will be a market. Because, dude, Carson Wentz was so bad in 2020 that by the advanced numbers, you could make an argument that he was worse than Dwayne Haskins. And somebody put down the assets. They traded a first-round pick to get
somebody
Carson
Somebody put their
Wentz.
Reputation on the line. Oh, I can fix this guy.
Right, exactly. And so with Garoppolo, quarterbacks are so scarce that I could see why somebody might be willing to move a package. But think about this. When the Chargers got Tyrod Taylor, Buffalo had just gone to the playoffs with Taylor. And honestly, since he left, he hasn't played but like two or three healthy games, right? But either way it goes, that was a dude that had been to a Pro Bowl, that had been a dude that got a team to the playoffs that hadn't been there in 20 years, like all of this sort of stuff. And the market for him was a three. I think that, or four, whatever it was. To me, that's about what you're getting out of Garoppolo. Garoppolo's no better than Tyrod Taylor. If Tyrod Taylor had played for the 2019 49ers, they might win the Super Bowl because he's a better quarterback than Jimmy Garoppolo was. But there's so few quarterbacks that you can get. If you need one right now, especially in a year where the draft don't look like it's going to give him two.
Yeah, he's a bridge. He's a star. You know what he is? And this might be a disservice to him. He's what they brought Kurt Warner in New York to be when Eli came in. It's like, okay, bro, this plug will get pulled pretty soon.
Yeah, now, the except Giants Kurt Warner Kurt was Warner, better than him.
And they didn't know that Kurt Warner still had another Hall of Fame career left in him in Arizona. No, look, Jimmy Garoppolo.
Hold on. Remember, don't forget this. They were good when they made that change. When they went from
like
Warner to Eli Manning. Yeah. Like, it was an understandable move, but it wasn't because the quarterback was playing badly. They were just like, yo, let's get on with
it. He was solid. Yeah, he was. And then, I mean, who knew? He went to Arizona and went crazy. No, but, I mean, look, Jimmy's limited. There's no question about it. And I know that it's time for Trey Lance. I get it. I was hoping for a moment. Really, I was just hoping to come on here and just see your face when it had to be Jimmy.
I mean, he gave us a moment. They spun him around. And he tried to flip it to second on the 6-4-3 double play. Like, that was a moment.
Can we talk about and I don't mean to pile on the brother, but Jaquiski Tartt had an interception that would have rendered that entire last possession obsolete, potentially. Kyle Shanahan could have gone for it on 4th-and-2 from Rams territory.
And you know why he should have? Because he knew damn well Jimmy Garoppolo was his quarterback and he might do something like that. Like, what got me about that last drive was, it did not appear, and I know I'm doing some armchair psychology, but I don't feel bad about it in this case. At no moment did it appear that Jimmy Garoppolo thought he's about to get this done. Like, when they wrapped him up and he made that spin, that was surrender. He'd given up. He was done.
There was no, hey, there's John Candy moment in the huddle before that last drive. Nobody, probably his own team didn't believe it.
No, I felt like he got, or it might have been a there's John Candy moment, because he felt like he got in the huddle and was like, all right, man, y'all ready to go? I know y'all tired, man. Don't worry. We'll be off in a second. We're going to be there. I want to ask you one thing. We only got a couple seconds left.
Yeah.
But I think it's funny this year in the NBA, real quick NBA thing.
Mm-hmm.
Kevin Durant and LeBron James have something in common. They both left sturdy, solid organizations to go it their way, player empowerment stuff, so forth and so on. Well, LeBron, he went to Cleveland after he left Miami, and now he's with the Lakers, and they gave him all the control, and look at that roster. And now we over here looking at Kevin Durant, well, what's going on with the Nets, and I wouldn't be surprised at all if by the time people hear this, James Harden don't play for them no more. I just wonder how both of them feel right now. Like, Durant in particular. Like, I knew he didn't want to be in Golden State anymore, but, man, he put his faith in the wrong people, dog.
This ain't working out as planned, for sure. Although, I guess I'm just too stubborn, man. The Nets look awful right now. But if, it's a big if. And Durant's, the difference is, like, the Nets, there's a level of potential for the Nets. Like, let's say all of this is Daryl Morey sowing discord. And this is really like this James Harden discontent is not as great as it's being made out to be. All right, let's say the Nets are telling the truth. We ain't trading James Harden. If Kevin Durant at least can say he's hurt and not available right now, which, as you know, you put Kevin Durant on the court, that changes everything. We're talking about guys that don't transcend their circumstances. Kevin Durant immediately makes you a contender. So if they get Kevin Durant with just James Harden back, just those two back, that changes the calculus. The Kyrie Irving thing is still funky. I don't see a team winning a championship with a dude only playing road games. But if they just were together, there's a huge asterisk next to their struggles. They weren't together last year and almost beat the eventual champions in the conference semifinals. And they're still not together this year. So you can look at nine straight losses at this point? You can look at them and be like, I get it. With the Lakers, where's the hope?
And who
would ever have said that about a LeBron James team? But that team, its ceiling is not the finals. Its ceiling is the second round.
Hold on. When have you said that about LeBron James teams? 3 out of 4 years with the Lakers.
Well, but okay. The first year he was hurt. And last year they got hurt. But him and Anthony Davis got hurt. Bro, they had Phoenix on the ropes before Anthony Davis got hurt.
Yeah,
LeBron was coming off the injury.
I wouldn't say he had him on the ropes, but I would also say a difference, though.
It was like 2-1.
Right, but 2-1? I don't think so, but I could be wrong. But think about this. They were 2-1 in the NBA Finals in 2015 with LeBron and the Pips, with Kyrie and Kevin Love being hurt. You know what I mean? Like, I said that LeBron was in decline and Lakers fans got really mad at me, but I didn't say he wasn't really good, right? It's not that, right? It isn't what that was going to be. But this LA experiment for him, you can't call it, like, it's not a failure because they won a championship. But they did not expect what it's going to be, which is only once in 4 years we're going to get past the first round.
No. You know what you call that? Underachieving.
Yes, it is. I mean, Anthony Davis
is... To bring it full circle.
Right. Anthony Davis has, like, been the underachiever of nothing as much as anything else. I will say this about the Nets before we go. The positivity rates in New York City are really, really low. I don't know what they are in the rest of the country, but the rates are really, really low and in a lot of places. I say that just to say it would not surprise me. And I've seen some reports saying that this could be a thing, but it would not surprise me at all if Kyrie can start playing home games before the end of the regular season. Wouldn't shock me in the least.
And if the rates go up, they could always go back.
But here's what that means. Now y'all got to put up with Kyrie again.
Full time. Be careful what you wish for.
Yeah.
I just don't want them to go down as one of the biggest what ifs, man. I mean, what if they had been healthy last year? What if they had been healthy and vaccinated this year? I would like to at least see them for an extended period at full strength and see what they're capable of.
When you think about it for the NBA, how whack it is. LeBron went to the Lakers, and while it's not the Knicks, Kevin Durant, James Harden, and Kyrie Irving went to New York, and it don't matter. Right? Like the buzz and excitement that we expected.
The show's in Cleveland. It's in Memphis.
Right. Yeah. Like but the buzz and excitement we expected from both of those things. Just like the NBA has a buzz excitement problem. And the idea that regardless of what the results were, we haven't even really gotten that invested in like banging on the Lakers or like banging on the Nets. Like it's just been it's a weird NBA time right now in terms of getting people to care about their regular season. And now, like, because both of these stories are fascinating. And I just think, you know, granted, it's the Super Bowl week, but should be all over the place. And oh, by the way, NBA, make your trade deadline in the dead Super Bowl week. Just a suggestion. This is not the week to do it. But if they trade James Harden, it's going to be cracking. I will say that. We will leave the regular schedule program for that one. But that, ladies and gentlemen, Michael Smith, check him out. Brother from another on the Peacock Network. Tell him what you're doing for the Super Bowl.
During the pregame show for NBC. Putting your boy on network television. I'm covering the Rams. I made Michael Holley cover the Bengals as his punishment. So, yeah, man, I'm out at work. Going back to my reporter roots, you know?
But you the man at that. Like, that's the thing, man.
Appreciate it.
This is a good look. I'm glad we're going to get to see you there. And I'm glad you got the joy around the sports. I feel it coming at you again.
You
know what I'm saying? It was a little time where it wasn't quite there.
It was a long time where it wasn't quite there. You saw it firsthand.
Yeah, but I feel like the love is back, and I'm happy for you on that.
It takes a friend to recognize that, and I appreciate you helping to bring that back. I get it when I'm around people like you, bro.
Oh, good. Hey, man, I get to be a little sports nerd with each other. That works out well, man. But hey, ladies and gentlemen, thanks so much for joining us here on The Right Time. We do this 3 times a week. Gabe Bassain and Adi Khan handling things behind the scenes. Thank you, gentlemen. Thank you for watching on YouTube. Remember, follow The Right Time. Rate us, review us, give us 5 stars. You only give us 4 stars. I'm inclined to believe you are a hater, and we'll talk to you guys in a couple of days. Take it easy.
Thanks for checking out The Right Time with Bomani Jones Podcast.
You can listen or follow on the ESPN app or wherever you listen to podcasts.
The Right Time
with Bomani Jones.